You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it, whether you're committed to a thru hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more. It's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code SHAKE for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code SHAKE. Ka'Chava.com, code SHAKE.
We are back with our combination podcast of Warriors and Valkyries, the Death Lineup, and Podhala, put together all in one package called Golden State Hoop. Brian and I are going to talk about some of the road woes for the Warriors, including I don't even know if that was necessarily the greatest NBA basketball game against the Kings, considering all the players who were out. Imagine if you're a kid and your parents get you a ticket to see Warriors Kings, you giant Steph Curry fan, and the Warriors bring you a roster where Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Jimmy Butler just don't play. That's sad times, man.
I mean, yeah. And even from the other side, it's everyone missing too, right? Is
just no Zach Levine, no Sabonis.
Yeah, I imagine it's, you know, not the cheapest ticket if you buy it ahead of time and Steph Curry's coming to town as well. So that's a bummer.
Do you remember the one time that happened to us?
Not with Steph, but with LeBron. I remember that. LeBron. I haven't seen him live because of that.
I had bought tickets on New Year's Day. StubHub had a sale of some sort. And so I bought tickets for us to see the Cavs come into town. And that was the time that LeBron just decided to take a 2-week vacation during the season. He was like, I'm burnt out. I'm taking these 2 weeks off. And so the Warriors killed the Cavs. I remember Kyrie was there and Kevin Love was there, but they killed him. Was that the same
the debut of Steph's shoes?
Yeah. And we got to see the very first Steph Curry shoe. That was pretty memorable. All right. And we're also going to talk about, we're going to go over some of these young players and how they're doing. Cause I think the season is going to kind of be like this, where you're just going to see the older guys take some breaks and it's going to be up to the young guys to keep up with the other teams here. It's going to be a great opportunity for Brandon Pajemski and Jonathan Kuminga, right? Like these guys want the minutes and they want the opportunities to score the ball and everything. So there'll be moments like that for them. Yesterday wasn't the best showcase for that. And then we're going to talk about the WNBA side is a little bit, we're kind of in a hold position with the CBA. They did extend it. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about Unrivaled and the Valkyries players who are on the teams in Unrivaled. They have some new teams there. And then there's this new league called Project B, and they have their first player. I'm sure very similar to Unrivaled, there will be some scenarios where some Valkyries players are probably going to get picked up for that league as well. And what else did I have on the docket here that I wanted to mention? Oh, and then we'll talk about our college basketball, women's college basketball picks for the championship. I don't know if there are really that many teams to choose from. Like, as far as like, there's two teams that seem to be quite a bit ahead of the other. So we'll see if anyone zags on their predictions. All right, so I guess we'll kick it off with some Warriors talk here. Let's bring on the Death Lineup.
Warriors!
All right, it was all good just a week ago, because when we last recorded, we were thinking that, you know, the season might be a little different in the way that they approach some of these games. The Warriors, you know, they'd beat some pretty good teams, and then they go on the road and they lose to a Giannis-less Milwaukee Bucks, and then they lose to a very young Indiana Pacers team. There were players on that Pacers team that I did not even really know existed.
Still don't know them.
And then they did win one coming back, and then they lost yesterday in Sacramento. So not the best last week for the Warriors. And you know what I realized? I think it was during the Bucks game. I just realized, you know what? You know how the Giants go 81 and 81 every single year until they don't?
Are you about to say this is going to be one of those years?
The Warriors are going to win in 48 games. Like, that's just where they're going to be at. They're not going to be like a top two or top three seed and surprise us by winning 55 games. They're going to be in that 5, 6, 7 slot there and win 48 games, because there's just too many times where if their stars are off, there's nobody to pick up the slack, which is what I think we wanted to see from Pajemski and Kuminga. And I'm just, you know, of all the people who's picking up the slack, it's like Moses Moody and Will Richard, who are not the ones that you thought of. So that's just kind of what I thought. I was like, 48 wins, here we come. 48 and 34. This is what this team is.
Do you buy into it all? Of that narrative going around that Adam Silver hates the Warriors and this terrible scheduling at the beginning? Because I think there was a Fridell quote that came out where he was like, for all the fans who like want to say that the sky is falling, like, this was a really, I've all my years covering the league, like, this was a really weird schedule to start the year. You know, you did multiple back-to-backs, these weird two game on the road from Milwaukee to Indiana back to, it was just, and then you have a, then it's a back-to-back, like, you put any stock into that? Or
so, okay, it's going to even out, right? Like, there's going to be a time in the season where they don't have these back-to-backs, because you can only have a maximum, right? So if you're talking to me and you have this old team and they are not injured yet, I would prefer to have them earlier in the season than later in the season when you don't know when these guys are, if they're going to be hurt or not. So, like, the Warriors are at full speed. I guess Jimmy, he tweaked something, so he's questionable. And so you'd rather have them when your team is healthy than into the unknown when you're not sure if they're healthy. So I don't necessarily see why that's a negative, unless, and I haven't looked at the schedule, unless the Warriors just have more back-to-backs than everybody else, but I don't think that's the case.
I don't know either. I haven't checked either. I agree with that, though. You know, get these out of the way earlier. But then that's kind of like, are they a 48-win team? If you get these out of the way earlier, like, is there still a chance for a 4 seed? Or will the 4 seed still be 48 games?
Yes.
I think there's still 4 seed. But I know, like, last podcast, I was like, you know, I think we looked at the next couple weeks of games, and it was Milwaukee, Indiana. Was it Phoenix, Sac, and then what's the next one? Do you know who they play next? I think it was maybe a tougher one again.
Yeah, their next 4 games.
Well, who's the next one?
The Nuggets.
Okay. So when we talked about it last week, I was like 4-1, baby. Like, 4-1 looks good here. And you kind of zagged, and you were like, I don't know, maybe 2 and 3 would be nice. And it was interesting because it was coming off of what looked to be like a really strong opening start from these guys. And you see Milwaukee, and it's like, Giannis isn't playing, and then, you know, all in the text chats that with Warriors fans, it's like, well, now I'm even more worried than when Giannis was playing, because, you know, they have no one to quote unquote, like, you know, get pumped and get up for, you know, to play. And Ryan Rollins cooked them, and kind of a fourth quarter collapse, and then Indiana comes around, and it's similarly a fourth quarter collapse. Like, I think for both Milwaukee and Indiana, they led the game in 3 quarters out of the 4. And I think the collapse was in the fourth quarter for each of those games.
And what team did that look like?
Did that Warriors team look? That looked like the CP3 Warriors.
Oh,
that...
I mean, it looked like last year too. Like they play well, and then down the stretch, when Steph is not in the game, and then, you know, honestly, Steph.
This was Steph in the game. In
yeah,
the
Steph end, this... play well in those games. He was and who knows? He's dealing with this illness now. It could have started at that point. You don't know. He's not going to make an excuse, but like that is who they were. And this is what Jimmy is supposed to fix. So
yeah, I thought Jimmy's. I actually didn't look at the box, but I remember when I was watching those games, I thought he played like good, you know, doing like the right stuff. There was a couple where it's like on the Indiana game, I think it was, is that he has a drive to the basket and he does the Jimmy thing and passes out of it. I'm like, dude, that was 2 points. That might be the swing of the game right there. But yeah, I honestly, like, I just looked at, I pulled up the stats before we started, just like the overall total plus minus. And I was like, there's no way, like, the Al Horford fit just has not looked right yet. Mm-hmm. And I pull it up, Al Horford, 13 out of 14 in terms of like worst plus minus. And overall, he's minus 37. Surprisingly, Will Richard is minus 44. So that obviously shows you like the stat isn't perfect, because Will Richard has felt like a plus in general, like just whenever he's available. But Al minus 37, and that kind of feels on point. Like, not necessarily Al's fault, but that Milwaukee game, you know, they killed him down the stretch in the drop coverage. And in the Indiana game, it was a similar thing. I don't know if it was the drop coverage, but, you know, they try to do the lineup of Steph, Jimmy, Dre, JK, Al to close the game, and it quickly showed that it wasn't working. So they pulled Al for Pajemski to close the game. Like, it would, you know, maybe at the 5 minute mark or the 3 minute mark, like it looked like that was supposed to be the closing lineup. And then they pulled Al because it was a quick run for Indiana. So that hasn't been working as much as I would have thought it would have seamlessly worked. You know, with the Al Draymond pairing, right? Like that just seems like it would be perfect. It's two smart basketball players, two smart defenders, one can shoot, one can pass the ball. Like it just seems like it would work. And I feel like it has not yet. Even that Phoenix game, it seemed like, you know, when you get the Jimmy is not returning notification, and then you start to see them come back into the game in like the fourth quarter, I think they are third quarter, like I thought that could end up being a game. And then they do a weird rotation where Steph starts the fourth, then gets pulled out, and then goes back in. And there was a chance that, you know, I felt like that one could have gone the wrong way, and then they end up putting them away. But yeah, that, I mean, in the Sacramento one, right? Like, it's like, okay, throwaway game, no Steph, no Jimmy, no Draymond. But on the Kings side, you know, you're missing LaVine, you're missing Sabonis. It's like, wait a second, there's maybe you should win this. And
Russ was just the most excited guy playing the hardest out of everybody.
Yeah. That was a total Russell Westbrook game. Like that had the writing on the wall and everything for Russ. But still, like, okay, Kuminga, you got your money. This is your opportunity to kind of show us. I thought he played really bad. I was not impressed for 1 second.
Warriors Twitter is really on him about that. They're down three. He gets the
dumb layup that he missed, or the
gets to the lane. And what he was actually doing is he was anticipating what the defense was going to do rather than reacting to the moment, because he figured he set up the move to set up a fadeaway. But the defender slipped or something, just out of the play completely. So all he had to do was take one step to the bucket, and he would have had a layup or a dunk.
Then he takes the fade.
Because he set it up that way, he takes a fade with nobody guarding him, and he missed.
Yeah.
And he immediately realized it because he went and attacked the offensive rebound. He just didn't get it. He has very much tried to fit into the flow of the offense, but these last few games where they may have needed him most have been his worst ones. And so those of us who were on the, oh man, maybe we don't have to trade this guy, and maybe he's the, you know, he's the guy who they actually need. If he plays like this, he's exactly who they need. I think people have slowed down on that train because he has just turned the ball over a lot. And, you know, the one thing JJ and I were talking about this last night, does he have the worst gather of all time? Like, he gathers, and it seems like he loses the ball like 50% of the time. Yeah. He has that long gather, and he either slips out of his hands or they rake it from him.
It's also always a foul, right? It's always a foul.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and this is not a let's be mean to JK, because I don't think he's at. Yeah, yesterday it was just the opportunity. It's he and Pods together. You guys want it. Now the vets are out, and you know, Steph and Draymond, the next time they have to talk to those guys, they're like, you had the opportunity. Like, this is, you know, this is not easy. This is hard. You want to, you know, you want to be the next guy after Steph. Well, you know, when he's not in, you have to play a little bit better. But I mean, it, you know, there's no, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. It's still so early in the season, but they do have a rough up and coming schedule. They play Denver. They're going to get smoked in Denver tomorrow, because there's going to be no Steph and possibly no Jimmy. And if there's no Steph and there's no Jimmy, you might as well not even play Draymond. He's going to be useless. He's going to pick up technicals, and he may even get kicked out of the game. You might as well just bench him too. And then,
and then
you have the Pacers, who they really need to kind of get a little bit of a revenge game on. Pacers come to town on Sunday evening, kind of a early evening game. And then you go into Oklahoma City. They've only lost one game all season, and it took kind of a miracle kind of win there for Portland. And then Wemby. And so it's just, you know, the you could play Wemby back to back. You will get a little bit of a gift with the Pelicans a week from Sunday. But like, these next, you know, you've already lost to the Pacers, and then Spurs, Thunder, Nuggets, Spurs. Like, I don't know, if they go 500 in that series, you know, that's probably pretty impressive. So yeah, it's going to be one of those things where, and this is kind of like what the 49ers did, is they got these early wins, and now they have a little bit of a cushion. So if they lose a couple of games, you're like, okay, you're still in good standing. The Warriors, or the easy games for the Warriors to win were Milwaukee and Indiana, which would have given them cushion to not have a great week this week. And they went out and lost all of those games. So,
I mean, that you're right. Like, that is the last year Warriors, but I think the last year Warriors would also come close to winning out, like that back-to-back in Oklahoma City and San Antonio. It's just like, it seems like an impossible feat. And then it's like, oh wait, they actually did it. And then, you know, if it was followed by bad teams again, they would lose to the bad teams. So yeah, I mean, yeah, the Niners built the cushion. The Warriors kind of at the start, you know, they looked really good at the start. But I mean, there's some things, like, I think they have to be like a four seed. Like, just on what, you know, my eyes told me to start the year, is that they look legit. So I think they need to still work on, of course, work on a ton of things within the squad, work in Al Horford. Think there's, I don't know, I have questions about Kuminga. Like, I think there were still moments where, you know, you start to remember a little bit of why you see him play so well in the beginning, and then it's like, oh wow, like, he's the, you know, this is exactly what they need. And then you start to see a few bad games, and you start to remember why, you know, maybe he got pulled in moments and replaced with some other guys, and that being, you know, obvious screen for Steph, and then he gets the ball and he holds it for 3 seconds, right? Like, it's supposed to be like this 0.5 basketball where the ball's swinging around, you know, you kind of already thinking ahead of the possession, of like, you get the ball, you already kind of know what you're doing with it. Like, with him, it's kind of like catch, 2 to 3 seconds of processing, and then next move, whether it's a pass or a go for your shot. And I think that frustrates them. I saw Steph get a little frustrated on just like a missed, you know, like, dude, I'm going to the corner here, like, set me a screen, or either give me the ball, and neither happens. So it's definitely something I'm going to continue to keep an eye on. But yeah, I just thought that was a moment for him last night. I thought Schroeder got into his head a little bit too. And then someone pulled the chair on him. I think Schroeder pulled the chair on him, and it was just like, he just was about to tumble to the ground. And then, yeah, I am being harder on him than I guess I am Pods, but you know, I expect more from Kuminga, and Pods hasn't gone to Shams and to say like, I should be a number one. You know, he has said he wants the Warriors franchise turned it over to him. But I didn't take him seriously at all. But maybe that's just me.
I mean, he's just like a confident young player. But you do put that stuff knowing who you're talking to, and you're going to, you know, the where that article's getting posted. And so he did that purposely, right? It was a specific thing. So what I wanted to do, because what you just said about Kuminga, you know who's not doing that, who's not hesitating, and who's being really decisive is Moses Moody. Moses Moody, you know, you were talking about sort of like if the plus minus lies or not. Moses Moody has really solid plus minus, he's a plus 4.6 per game. The best plus minus on the team per game is Draymond. He's at an 8.6 per game. Then Jimmy's at 6.3. Quentin Post, 6.2. And then Moses, 4.6. Steph is only at a 2, which tells you how poorly he's played in some of those games. So just looking at the young players. All right. So we are in, is this year 3 or 4 with Pods?
We're in year 3.
Okay, year 3 with Pods. His box score numbers look solid. He's averaging just under 30 minutes a game, 12.6 points off of 47% shooting. He is not shooting the three a ton. He actually has almost the same amount of attempts as Al Horford per game at 4.8. And he's shooting 37.2%. I think they'd probably be okay if he was in that 38, 39 range, but 37 is not poor either. He's just not pulling the trigger as much. And he rebounds extremely well for a guard. We know that. So on the surface, in his plus minus, he's 4.2 average per game. So on the surface, Pods is kind of doing what you expect him to do, unless the Warriors need him to take that leap. He is not really taking that leap if you expect him to be the starting two guard, right? Because, you know, you look at, I guess Klay Thompson got benched in Dallas. But in the Warriors offense, the two guard should eat. If you can shoot, you should be eating in this offense because of all the creativity around it and all of the opportunities that you will get. And Pods is just kind of being a version of last year's Pods, I guess. I'm looking at his last year's numbers. Last year's numbers, he was, it's almost exactly the same as last year, almost to a T. So he's basically being the same version of last year, maybe 1 point more per game. Now, does he need to be at 15 points, 16 points a game, where he is shooting the three ball a little bit more? I think so, unless unless this is coming from somewhere else, which I think that's the argument for Moses actually taking some of those minutes. But what have you thought about Pods so far?
I mean, yeah, like not overly impressed and not, you know, overly disappointed. It's just the same, you know. I think, I guess when you hear this guy's been working out a lot off in the off season, and then, you know, there's some expectations, it's like, okay, let's see. But yeah, like you said, the numbers kind of line up from year to year, and I think that's my expectation, I guess. I'm sure there's room for improvement, but like, I think he's just, you know, I don't expect him to ever be an all-star in his career. That, like, I have those expectations at Kuminga, right? That's probably why I'm harder on him. But with Pods, I'm just like, can you be a starter in a, you know, contending roster at some point in your career? And maybe that's not right now. Can you be a backup point guard right now and on a contending team? So I don't know. That's just my expectations. I think they probably should be higher if they want to be better. You know, there's still Melton coming, and he lost his starting job, right? Like, it's Post. They've been going Post all these games, at least starting in whatever the one before Milwaukee was. But I know he talks a big game, so it's kind of like I should take him at his word. I should just be like, all right, yeah, like, you want to be you
in this offense. he should be a 15 points per game scorer, and he's not. Whether it's because he's not taking enough shots, or he's not getting to the rim, or he's not being decisive enough. Like, how many times have we seen pods with the basketball trying to do three or four different moves, and then he ends up with a terrible shot? Like, often that's kind of, you know, he wants those moments, and when given those moments, often he's kind of stuck. And that, some of that is because of his athleticism. He's a decent athlete, but he's not a great athlete. So I think if they are going to take it to that next level, if they are going to be, like you said, like a four seed, some of this is him. He needs to take that level of a leap, and he has not done that yet this year. And yeah, we're 9 games in, right? He still has 80% of the season left to go.
And the thing he has over Kuminga and Moody is that he hasn't really gotten buried ever. Like, he's always kind of had the opportunity in the 3 years that he's been here. He's always
been. Steve will yell at him and be vocal in the media about him, but I think it's because he knows that he can take it.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's just kind of, he's got to show up. He's got to, I mean, last night was just the perfect opportunity for them to kind of put together this young Warriors player. You know, the starting five was all drafted. It was Pods, JK, Moody, Will Richard, Post. Like, that was a homegrown starting five right there. And, you know, again, leading for two quarters, lose the lead a little bit in the third, kind of have in the game for like half the fourth quarter, and then, you know, the ending. And I guess they're in it for the whole time. But yeah, it's just, I think he needs to step up, and he needs to take over some of these moments, because there's going to be a lot of moments like this. We've already had, you know, this game, a little bit of Phoenix with no Jimmy. But there's going to be opportunities like this a lot, I think, this year, especially. Like you said, tomorrow might even be an opportunity for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's look at JK. This year, year five for JK, he is averaging 30.8 minutes a game. His highest ever was 2 years ago. He averaged 26. His scoring is up. He's at 17.2 points a game. His rebounding is considerably up. So if you want to give him a shout out for something, it would be his rebounding. And his totally. Assists are also up, which kind of says maybe he is being a little bit more decisive this year with the basketball. His assists are up from 2.2 assists last year, 3.1 this year. His three-point percentage is also up. He's shooting 41% versus 30% last year. He shot 30% from three-point land. And so he's always been a pretty good two-point percentage shooter. He's at 55%. He's been much higher earlier in his career when they just had him in a dunker spot, and he's just dunking,
taking less shots.
Yeah. His free throw percentage also 82%. So looking at those box score numbers, he's taken advantage of his opportunity. Now, does it translate to, to wins? Cause you know, what they always say is everybody plays better when you play with Steph. And some of that is true because he's getting these starter minutes, and most of those minutes are, I wouldn't say most of them, but a lot of them are with Steph. So that his numbers should be up. So that looks good. I think it's when, you know, the moments that we see where maybe Steph is struggling, or like yesterday when Steph was out, that's when you kind of want to see what JK can do. And I wonder if he's at this crossroads where he's playing a specific way when he knows Steph and Jimmy are there. And then when the lesser players than Steph and Jimmy are out there with him, and then he needs to kind of take a little bit more of the leadership role, maybe he's at a crossroads there. I thought they started the game where he was doing that, because I think their first bucket came from he did a hezzy, went right, pulled up, jumper. And I was like, okay, he's going to get into a scoring mode where he's attacking, and then he's either pulling up because they're playing him, playing him to drive, or he's going to be able to get by these guys. And I thought he was going to be very aggressive, and he just was not as aggressive as I thought he was going to be. Do we have his box from yesterday? He was 8 of 19 shooting, 9 rebounds, 24 points. So, you know, he was a plus two. So it's not like, it's not, I think what probably the thing that we're remembering is a lot of those clutch moments where they needed him to do something and he did not hit that shot. But overall, like if you look at those numbers, I think the Warriors would take that, but they would also take winning the game and they didn't win. So I don't know. I think the ride of JK is going to be very similar to how it's been through his entire career. As long as he's with us, he's going to have high expectations. When he meets those expectations, people are going to say, see, I told you so. He's got it. And when he doesn't meet those expectations, the other side of the fan base is going to go, we need to trade this guy. He's a sucker. And that's just kind of been the JK experience. I think you and I have been more pro JK than most. Your brother is like JK's biggest fan. He thinks that he's been calling JK's greatness from day one. So like that's just the ride. And we know that we've been on this ride for the whole time. I would like to see him utilize this good start and continue to play well. And I think the rebounding and the assist numbers being up are key. He cannot stop doing those things because those things are going to help him with everything else, I think.
Yeah, I think, when it's going, it looks good. Like in a couple of those games early, it's like the ball's swinging around, the ball's zipping around. He's making the right pass inside the paint. I think it was just, I mean, 8 for 19 is not good, but I know that, you know, he's the number one option in that offense, not used to it. So I guess it's understandable, in that regard, but he's just going to have these moments. And at some point it can't be like, you know, well, he's still new to this moment and he's still new to being the 1A. Like, no, this is like a contending roster, you know, there are opportunities to win some of these games that he can, you know, take over, because there's going to be opportunities. There's going to be tomorrow and there's going to be many others back to backs where guys are sitting. And
he's going to have the fresh legs, right? He's the young guy. He wants the opportunity. He's going to get the opportunity like Friday, tomorrow. Steph doesn't play. Jimmy may not play. And like I said, you might as well not play Draymond. There's another opportunity for him and Pods and Moody and maybe Will Richard to show off, like, yeah, like I can step up in these moments, but nobody's going to get a bigger responsibility with this fan base than Kuminga. That's just going to be what it is because of the 5 years that we've had him.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the whole Warriors offense, right? Like, I don't know, maybe like it's built for Steph, right? And so I'm almost wondering, like, when he's out, like, do you just go back to what they did in Minnesota, right? Where it's like, all right, Kuminga, just put your head down and get 26. They didn't win a single one of those games, though. I don't know, man. I don't know. No Steph, it's for sure a loss, but I'd be interested to see. I'm interested in watching how he, you know, adapts and what he wants to do. Is it put your head down and get your buckets? Is it stay within the offense and you know, maybe more timely shots? I don't know.
The best marketability for him is to be able to play on this team really well. Like, that will be his marketability. Showing teams that JK can play within the system and excel in the system. And you know, the Warriors system is a very player friendly system. It's movement, it's passing, not a lot of one-on-one, not a lot of pick and roll.
Not a lot of standing around.
Yeah. So if he, that would be his best, like, trade value would be to play well here. But then if he plays too well, then maybe they decide to keep him and maybe that might not be what he wants. So this is the life of a young NBA player who is kind of between prospect and all-star. There's a lot of guys in that range.
Do you think Will Richard sees much time in Santa Cruz?
We'll talk about him in a second because I have some thoughts too. All right, Moses Moody. Moses Moody this year, he's averaging 13 points a game. His previous high was last year when he was at 9.8. He is shooting the three ball fantastically well. I don't imagine he will keep up a 51% average here. He's also taking way more threes than he's ever taken in his career. And the interesting thing is his minutes aren't really that up from last year. And I wonder if that's going to change because of how well he's played. He does everything decently well. Like, that is who Moses Moody is. And if the shooting, the three-point shooting specifically, is all of a sudden something he is excellent at, I think he should get more minutes than the low 20s that he's currently getting. But then you wonder about who they take those minutes away from. And we'll have this conversation with Will Richard too. Does it take away from Buddy Hield, who's only really playing like, I don't know, is he at like 16 minutes a game right now? Let me see what Buddy is at. Buddy is at 17 minutes a game. GP is at 9. Poor Guy is only getting 6 minutes a game. And then Pat Spencer is actually getting more than Guy. So I don't know where these minutes necessarily are going to come from. I mean, you can take small amounts, but Kerr likes it when Buddy plays, because if Buddy gets hot, the whole team gets hot. And then if Buddy's not hot, then you can kind of tell, and then maybe you pull back on his minutes. But he's such a good player for their morale when he's shooting the lights out. But you know, Moses is basically, if you think of Moses as like a B or a B plus player, he is a half of a grade above that now. Like, he's just really playing good basketball. So what do you do with Moses? Do you give him more minutes? Do you want to see him in more lineups? Or is he playing the perfect version of Moses, and this is kind of how you should play him?
No, give him more minutes, man. He's kind of showing exactly what you want out of like a great 3-and-D player. He's guarding the ball and he's hitting 50% of his threes, although that's not likely to keep up. Like, no, you give that player more minutes. I'm just looking at who you bring down. Like, I think Pat Spencer is, that was a rough game last night for Pat Spence, man. I just like him. Like, what does he, if you can't shoot, then you better do something else at like damn near an elite level. Right. And he's like, I don't know. He's not a great finisher at the rim. Like, does he just put together the offense, I guess? So, yeah, take away Pat's, DMP that guy.
Well, okay. So I think you can DMP Pat if you can play Pajemski for the majority of the point guard minutes when Steph is not there, right? And I think they generally would, but
I get that there's a need for ball handlers, and I guess, you know, that will change. Pat won't touch the floor if DeAnthony Melton comes back and is like even 70% of what he was last year. So, yeah, that. But there's just other ball handlers that can bring up the ball too, you know.
Like, but maybe that changes when Melton comes back, and then Melton takes all the Pat Spencer minutes.
That's what I just said. Yeah.
Like that. That could be the solution to that. Because Moses does not handle the basketball well. It's not like you can have him handle it. Who else? Like, I guess you do run some point Jimmy when it's him just on the court.
It's a lot of Jimmy, like, just, yeah, you know, in those in that unit, just with the ball at the top, and it's like clock's going down. It's like, okay, well, we already threw the ball around the wing like 5 times, and the ball's in Jimmy's hands at the start, at the top of the key, so he's going to do something. Steph, JK, Draymond, like, these are all ball handlers that could do something. You know, Draymond, of course, more reliant on Steph or Jimmy being there, but you don't need Pat.
All right, young Will Richard, he's playing 16 minutes a game. He's shooting 65% from the field and 50% from three-point land. Lots of dunks and putbacks for him. Dunks, putbacks, and three-pointers is essentially what he's shooting. 9.1 points a game in 16 minutes is fantastic. Garbage time, it is fantastic for the specific lineups that they're putting him in. And let's go back to your question. Do you play Will more? Like, does he not? I mean, he probably should play, especially if Seth Curry and Melton are back. He probably will have to go back to Santa Cruz. But like right now, would you rather see Will Richard on the floor Or would you rather see GP? Or would you rather see Gee? Or would you rather see Pat Spence? Like, or should they just
definitely taken those guys out? Like, I know that GP's name was in there too. GP's like still, I guess, like a spot. Like, okay, last 5 seconds of a defensive possession in the quarter, or like, okay, Harden's absolutely killing us. Like, we might need GP. He's situational. GP's situational, but I think Will Richard for, you know. He kind of takes over his minutes when it's not, I guess, situational. I think I totally agree. When Buddy's going, this team is going. You know, he showed me something in the playoffs that I feel like I'll always ride with Buddy, and like I want him on the floor because there's going to be opportunities to get him going. Mm-hmm. Of course, more when he's playing more, but there are moments where you could say Will Richard should have those minutes too. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm already shooting up. You know, we've shot up through GP2, Pat Spence, Gee, you know, like he's on like the Buddy type of part of the rotation. If Buddy's the sixth or the seventh man, like Will Richard's right there too.
Do you think Kerr would trust him in some of these bigger games though? Because it's one thing to play well against Indiana when you just got a bunch of Will Richards on the other team.
Yeah.
But like, you know, down the stretch in a big game against Denver or something.
Are these not the type of players that he just kind of randomly trusts down the stretch?
Oh, I don't know. He's athletic. Like Will Richards, that's for sure.
He's just the guys who, you know what it takes to win. Like he won a national championship doing the right, you know, doing all the things that Kerr likes. Like that's just a guy who we just will give minutes to and probably close games with that make us like confused at the moment. But with Will, like I've been quite impressed.
Yeah, and I just wonder if Kerr's going to have to make a choice. When Melton and Seth Curry come back, is Gary Payton playable?
Situational.
Okay, but then you're carrying 14 guys on your bench?
Yeah. I mean, when Seth is there, that's the 15th spot. They haven't signed him yet.
Yeah. So then Will's going to have to be on Team Santa Cruz for a lot of that. As a
two-way. Probably.
Actually, he's not a two-way. He's actually on
the roster. He has a roster spot, yeah. I haven't seen any. Who is a two-way?
Is Tui a two-way? Or Tui has a roster spot, too?
No, I think he's a two-way.
Okay.
Jackson Rowe, two-way.
Yeah.
I forget I don't even know if they have a third.
I remember.
Fans have a spot?
Yeah, I think so. Opening night. When they brought everyone out in the introductions, there were a couple guys who I was like, oh, okay, those guys must be two ways because I don't recognize them. So there's our, you know,
Pat Spence is on the two way. So Pat Spence is the third two way.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. So there's our conversation about these young players and the NBA Cup or the Emirates NBA Cup or whatever you want to call it starts tomorrow for the Warriors. They have never really seemed to be all that invested in winning this thing.
They win a couple games though, you know, like that. Did they even go to Vegas against Houston or was that to go to Vegas? Like that was
it was to go to Vegas. Yeah.
Okay.
So, they are currently, we gave the schedule. Let me pull up the standings here. Not that standings matter all that much at this point, but they are 5-4. And there is a possibility. I hope not. I hope it doesn't happen. But there is a possibility where, you know, they may be under 500 for a little while. But you look at some of the other teams, the Timberwolves are right at 500. Clippers are under 500. The Grizzlies are under 500. Grizzlies are 3-6. Whoa, the Dallas Mavericks 2-6. Those are bad times. So, you know, there are some teams who are kind of underperforming, and I wouldn't consider the Warriors underperforming necessarily, except for those two games on the road, the back-to-back, like you said. They have an excuse for whatever reason if they want to use it. But they are 48 wins until they show me differently. That's what I'm running with.
I think we're both on the same page. Sky isn't falling, but I think I'm more optimistic than you are about this team down the line. Because I think they really do believe they're contenders. And I think they surely have realized or recognized that you don't want to be on the bottom half of a playoff bracket if you want a good chance at, you know, winning this thing. Like, you know, against Sacramento that one year, they were the sixth seed, and then they go on to play LA in the second round. And then, but then last year they were the seventh seed. Like, it pays to be the higher seed to get that home court advantage to, you know, so you're not like sprinting at the end of the year and like out of breath, tired. Like, you want to be able to like coast a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if, like, you know, I don't know if they have the roster to be able to coast. It just kind of depends on the health status of these guys. But I think I'm betting on it. I mean, it's hard to bet on health. It's like a flip of the coin sometimes. Like, you can't just, can't really guess unless, you know, a player's like injury prone. But we have some, you know, maybe Jimmy 65 games, Steph hopefully like 65 at the least for all these guys. So yeah, I think I'm just betting on, I think they're going to be a four seed. That would be my guess. That would be my guess.
All right, let's talk a little bit of Valks here with Pod Hala.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
All right, have you been we talk about this these last few shows, but have you been following any more of the Valkyries international players? I'm in our Discord. I'm seeing a lot of Eustay. I guess she played a game against Carla not the other day, right?
Mm-hmm. And then Carla's, I think she played against Janelle yesterday.
Yeah, so our consultant, or the person who's on the watch, Costa, who is in our Discord, has said that he saw Eustay play maybe the best game. I'll actually get the quote because he wrote it in the Valkyries channel. He said, Eustay getting star minutes now, it seems. And this was in the Janelle game. And he just said it was the first game where Eustay looked like a star level player. She was the best player on either team in crunch time. Obviously needs to do more, needs to do it more often, but you know, she's very young. So I hope Costa doesn't mind us. He did not say post this on the podcast, so I hope he doesn't mind. But I love reading his stuff because he's obviously watching the games and he's as invested as we are in the success of Eustay.
And he's watching more than I am.
Yeah.
You know, I felt the basketball fatigue of like, not like I want to watch, but I'm just like, these games keep stacking up. I'm behind on Warriors games. I got to watch Eustay's team. I got to watch college. It's like, shout out to the Athletics women's basketball pod, because there's no off season, man.
There is no off season. So the other stuff about Valkyries players, so it's kind of cool because have you seen their Twitter channel where they're showing like where they're playing internationally and then where they're playing for Unrivaled? They have like little graphics and stuff. So that's pretty cool that you can kind of follow a little bit through the Valkyries Twitter channel. And
Kate's on Paige's team, I think. She's on that new Breeze FC.
Okay. Do you think this was purposeful that for the Breeze team, Kate, Cameron, and Paige all on the same team?
Kate, Cameron.
I thought that was an, they showed the graphic and I was like, wait a second here. Also Dominic Malong and Rekia Jackson and Ari McDonald. So if they can get some scoring, if Paige dominates, they will probably be a pretty good team. On the Hive, Monique Billings is playing for the Hive. She's playing with Kelsey Mitchell, Easy Magbegor, Natasha Heidemann, Sanaya Rivers, and Sonia Citron. It's actually cool to see some of these younger players who you were talking about a couple of years ago in college and stuff who are now playing pro, and now they're playing Unrivaled. It's cool to see kind of the follow through from college to now. Let's see, who else or what other Valkyries players are on?
Veronica's on the Mist, I think.
Veronica, Brianna Stewart, Alana Smith, Alicia Gray.
That's going to be a really good team.
Arike. Who's I can't pronounce his name. Lee Yeru? Lee?
Yeah. You pronounced it right the first time.
Okay. And then I think that's it for Valk's players. But
Leticia Mihir, she is injured, reserved player.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I did look at the merch, hoping that we were going to get some better merch this time, and they do have jerseys. I'm looking for hats. I will take a nice hat that is not a dad hat. So they do actually have snapbacks this year, so I may have to pick me up a snapback for one of the teams. I'm not sure yet. I got to figure out who's going to be my team. But
it's tough to pledge allegiance to a roster because. Last year, I decided to pick the Lunar Owls, and then, you know, the Valkyries expansion draft happened, and then they signed some players in the offseason, and it was like, okay, so now we have two Valkyries on the Laces with Kate and Tiffany Hayes. So then I started following the Laces, and then now two clubs were added. You have an expansion draft where you only get to, I think it was only get to keep two players. And now Kate's not, no, we have no Valkyries in the Laces now. Like, I'm trying to and I guess that's the point of a team, right? Like, you follow them regardless of the player. But I wanted to. There's just so much movement. Like, there's too much player movement for me to be like, okay, I'm going to put my stake into this team.
The coolest logo, though, like, if I wasn't going to pick a hat from one of the players of the Valkyrie, the team that the Valkyries are on, to me, the coolest hat is the vinyl. That might be my pick is having the vinyl on a hat. I might have to do that. All right, so we have to talk about this new league called Project B.
That's why I brought it up last time.
And there's a brand new article by Sabrina and Mike Vorkanov in The Athletic. About Nneka Ogumike is the first player publicly attached to the league. Alana Beard said that there are other players signed too. They have multiple current All-NBA players, so we can kind of like, there's only 15 All-NBA WNBA players, right? Or are there only 10? Do they have three teams 10. Or two teams? Okay, so
teams.
There's only 10 players on the all WNBA team, so you can kind of like
who's
start
not
guessing.
In Unrivaled,
right?
Like Sabrina is not playing Unrivaled this year.
Okay, what about the MVP of the season?
Asia, Caitlin, yeah.
So, I feel like if they would have got Caitlin, though, she would have been announced first. And so the idea is, okay, so here's another clue. Multiple current all WNBA players who have received those honors, young superstars who are on the rise, and players from four different continents. So they're going very international about these choices. And, you know, something that we learned in just kind of covering the WNBA and the draft from last year is there's lots of talent that just do not make rosters because of how hard it is to make a team when you have such few roster spots. Now that will open up a little bit next year. And hopefully with the CBA, they will have more actual roster spots. So you don't have to, you know, go into games with like only 9 healthy players and such. Mm-hmm. But there is talent. And if the, as you think about how, as the women's game keeps growing and growing and growing, there will be more talent that will be available. And maybe Project B does become something. I don't imagine there's going to be many unrivaled players, if any, who aren't also on WNBA rosters, because that those unrivaled rosters are so much smaller. So there's probably going to be a 1-to-1 ratio there of unrivaled players being WNBA players. But I do wonder if there are going to be some Project B players who aren't good enough to make the WNBA, but they get on tape in Project B and then they play in the WNBA because the leagues play at opposite times of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder what this does for negotiations. Does it help or hurt for the current CBA?
So the way I look at it,
like the unrivaled case where it's like, we could be the, you know, we can be the next WNBA if you get, which I know we don't really believe like that, but just a little bit of leverage. And then Project B is like, nope, we're going to start taking some players to over here.
So the way that I'd look at it is, I think Project B, we have to know more about how many games they plan to play. What did they say? They were only starting out with 6 teams or something like that. Like, it's a small amount of teams. And, you know, you're going to have bigger rosters because it is full court, 5-on-5, unlike Unrivaled. And if I'm the WNBA, I may go to Unrivaled and go, look, like, we would prefer the players come here because the court is smaller. You're not playing all that often. Your body should not get beat up. And, you know, we support this league. I don't know if you want to go and say, you know, this other league that is international that you would not really have. I'm not saying that they have control over Unrivals, I don't think they do, but you don't know what Project B could be dealing with international. That is another sort of wrinkle to it. We know how historically there have been some incidents with some players internationally. So, you know, you would hope that it's on the up and up, but you don't know for sure. And then what kind of money goes into that league?
I think there's some very rich people backing it, like more rich than any of the people backing.
Yeah, and will Saudi Arabia be invested into that league, which kind of changes.
Has that been confirmed? Because I feel like everyone on Twitter is saying it.
I don't know, actually. I think that was the thought, that that's how they're getting the startup money, was through Saudi Arabia. So if I'm the league, I kind of look at Unrivaled and go, okay, we'd rather our top players stay here. But if Project B gets started and they're offering, you know, $3 million a year for just a winter season, some of these players are like, I only have to do this for like a few years and I can pocket this money. So that's interesting. Now, as far as the leverage, I think Project B existing is actually good for all of basketball, because what it does is, if there is something to this league, the players, it gives them more leverage because there's more opportunity. Now, I'm not saying that somebody like Asia Wilson is going to go, you know what, I don't need to play in the WNBA because this league is paying me 5x more. I don't think that happens, but the leverage of that happening could be a good thing for the players, so that the WNBA just gets their stuff together, man. Like, they need to, when we've talked about this, and I don't feel like I'm speaking out of turn because I've heard people who've been following this league say this for a very long time, but they need to take advantage of this period of time of where the growth is so huge. And we cannot hear anything about, oh, you know, the structure and the ecosystem, like, we're just not ready. Like, that's yesterday. Like, you need to move, and you need to move fast, and you need to be able to support the growth, and you need to be able to support Caitlin Clark Caitlin Clark's popularity and Angel Reese's popularity, and you need to be able to support all of those things and use it to raise your league up in a way that they have not yet been able to do so. They're signing contracts to get more television money, so they're doing that on that side. And now let's sign this CBA to where the players think that they're getting a fair shake and that you're growing with this thing together, because that's what you want out of a CBA. You want the league and the players union to feel like they are growing together at the same time. And if there's this Project B thing that's kind of hanging out there and they have investment and they have players who are kind of interested, I think it just keeps the WNBA on their toes and it makes them come to this understanding like, yeah, the players do actually have some power in this scenario.
Yeah, competition is good. NBA's got a monopoly, so they don't worry about a damn thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And by off topic, but have you seen a House of Dynamite?
I have not.
The only reason I bring it up because there's an Angel Reese cameo. Yeah, so out of nowhere.
Good
too.
For her, man. That's really cool. So
I wouldn't even recommend the movie.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if that movie's cool enough necessarily to be that intriguing for young people, but it
almost
cool
had me. I was like, I was so locked in, and then the main complaint is the ending. So
yeah, I heard that they did not land very well. They didn't land the plate very well. Okay, let's end with a discussion of who we think. I'm going to pull up the women's college basketball. I don't even know is there a top 25 yet for women's college basketball?
I mean, there's a ranking. Like, they do preseason rankings, and so there are, you know, I'm sure UConn was one.
Okay, so predict who you think is going to be the number one team at the end of March Madness in this year for
at the end of March Madness. You're asking me to predict who wins March Madness?
Yeah, who wins March Madness right now? Who would you put your money on?
South Carolina, which I made the mistake of going with last year.
Interesting. So
I think they got a pretty deep roster. I mean, they always have a deep roster, but I kind of like their top to bottom more than, you know, UConn. I can't even say more than UConn confidently. Like, I think Sarah Strong has the chance to be the best player out of anyone. And because I'm in between, and correct me, maybe there's another one, but it's UConn for me. It's either UConn, South Carolina, or UCLA.
Those are the top three in my head. Those are the top three in the AP, the preseason AP right now as we speak. Those are your top three teams. And then it goes Texas, LSU, Oklahoma, Duke, Tennessee, NC State, Maryland. That rounds out the top 10. And unfortunately, no Bay Area teams. Actually, no, Stanford got three votes. So they're hanging out with three votes.
Nice.
Okay. This feels too easy, but like, how can you go UConn against UConn? Yeah. Is
my only argument is like, they just lost Paige Beckers. Like, what? Isn't that just the most obvious argument, is that they lost Paige Beckers?
Yes, but they also had the best freshman in college basketball, who's now a sophomore and who just looks like she's going to be like for the next 3 years, just like just get better and better. And you know who interests me though? The USC, the young freshman,
Jazzy Davidson.
And so the only reason I know who she is Shaquille O'Neal has a Netflix show about restarting Reebok. And part of the show is him recruiting athletes to become Reebok athletes. And so Reebok basketball, like when Shaq was playing, he signed with Reebok instead of Nike, like out of college. And people just thought like, there's no way. And so he and then AI obviously signed with Reebok as well. But then Reebok stopped doing basketball. And so they brought Shaq back, and he is the VP of X, Y, and Z of Reebok basketball or whatever. And so part of his thing is like, he's got to go recruit and pitch on these NIL deals to these young athletes to be a part of the Reebok family. And one of those was to Jazzy. And so I watched that segment, and it was one of those where you're like, okay, she's not picking Reebok. Like, there's no way. And it was very quick. She's like, oh, she went to Nike. But I was like, oh, she's really interesting. Like, she looks like she's got like the personality to actually be like a star athlete, you know, because some of it is like on the court, but then there's also that other piece off the court. And I was impressed, you know, as you can be impressed by an 18-year-old kid, but she seems like she's kind of on that rise to becoming one of those players too. And she has free reign because there's no Juju this year. So she may be able to open up some eyes. So not to say that USC is going to, you know, I'm picking UConn, but.
Oh my God. You were actually thinking about picking USC.
No. I'm saying okay. She's going to be the one that I kind of keep my eye on from the freshman perspective. And then there's the,
Well, you kind of have to keep your eye on Aaliyah Chavez because.
Yeah, that's the other one because Oklahoma?
Oklahoma. My reasoning is because there's never, and I'm 99% sure because I know I looked this up in the past. Like 2 years ago, I was following her career because there are barely any Mexican hoopers. Like I got to make sure that, you know, I show love to the Mexican hoopers. And she was number one for like the past 2 years. And literally at the final stretch, the last 100 meters, they give it to Jazzy instead of Aaliyah. She had it the whole time. And I don't, that might, some people were saying it's politics. Like, I don't even know what it is, but I'm following Aaliyah Chavez. She's not afraid to shoot that ball. She's kind of got the, like, you know, deep three type of, you know, there's like some Caitlin in her game. She's just pulling that thing, but yeah, she shot a lot of shots in that first game with Oklahoma.
I find the social media stuff so interesting. She's only got 16,000 Twitter followers.
Twitter, you'll never find many a high Twitter follower count for most of these. But for most celebrities, I feel like Instagram is kind of the celebrity hot pot.
84,000 on Instagram.
Yeah, checks
so
out.
That's where you're going.
I mean, even NBA prospects. I know when I was kind of doing like scouting and stuff, I'd go on their Twitter pages to like say like, "Hey, would you be down to be on this podcast?" And it's like, you feel like you have a chance because they have like 2,000 followers because they never tweet. And it's like, you're the number five prospect. Like, shouldn't you have like 20,000? But yeah, Twitter's, I feel like, is some don't, some do, some don't.
Okay, so we'll be back.
Who's?
UConn.
Oh, okay.
We'll be back next week with some more Golden State hoop. Hopefully the Warriors turn it around. We'll see if there's any updates to the CBA, and then we'll have some stuff to talk about. Hopefully the Warriors just don't get killed tomorrow. That is my fear. I feel like Jokic is like, you know what, you guys won that game early in the season, and now I'm gonna make you pay.
Yep.
All right, for Bri, I am Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
You know that goal you set at the start of the year? You can still do it. Whether you're committed to a through hike with friends, lifting heavier, or simply walking more, it's not too late to stick with it and make your future self proud, especially with the all-in-one nutrition shake from Ka'Chava. Because quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Ka'Chava's all-in-one nutrition shake, and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, adaptogens, and so much more. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense, just the good stuff your body craves. So instead of adding to your backstock of supplements that overpromise and underdeliver, simplify your progress with just 2 scoops of the highest quality ingredients. Stick with your wellness goals. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS for 15% off. That's Ka'Chava.com and use code FITNESS. Kachava.com, code FITNESS.